Hello, world. Welcome to WFHR's Rapids Report for this Thursday, November 6, 2025. Say a big thank you to our friends at Crockett Septic sponsoring this segment. And, of course, all of you joining us have your host, James. We're joined right now by UW-Madison Extension Wood County's own Matt Lippert, our ag agent over there. Always enjoy talking with you, Matt. Thanks so much for being here today. How you doing?
Really great.
Good to hear, Matt. Appreciate that. And I always appreciate the time. We were talking in our pregame a little bit, and I think a good place to start is kind of, you know, the state of dairy right now and how things are in state.
Yes, you know, so you and I rehash current events a little bit ahead of time, and it's interesting through my filter what I see happening in agriculture and what you see coming through the media, what they would be. The status of the dairy industry, 2024 and 2025, I think, are both going to go down as fairly decent margins for producers. We're on a downtrend right now, so that's a classic farmer think, right? It's like, oh, it's okay, but it's not going to stay that way, right?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So we have that happening. We have prices dropping, and why? Some of it's not 100% predictable, but so the two main manufactured products that come from dairy. It's going to be cheese and butter. We've got all these other cottage cheese and ice cream, and we got all these other products. But two drivers that take up the most milk, more than the fluid milk consumed as well, is cheese largest, and secondary butter. And in the federal government had a rehaul of a pricing system. It took many years to get something out, but it was introduced this summer, and there's a formula there that puts the value. The two main value components of milk are butterfat and protein. And there is hardly any protein in butter. So it's just about, it's 80% butterfat, butter is. Except for in Europe, then it's 82%. They have a different standard.
Huh.
You know, and our butter tends to be salted, and they never put salt in their butter.
So. That I heard.
Yeah. But, you can buy unsalted butter in the grocery store, too.
Yeah.
But anyhow, so how that works, then, is butter tells you what butter fat is worth, because it's very directly related. Butter is mainly butter fat. And then what you do is you use an equation, and whatever the market is saying cheese is worth, then the difference. You say, well, this cheese, cheddar cheese, is so much butterfat, so you take out what the butterfat was worth from what we know about butter, and then the rest must be valued on the protein. And so what we've had this year, after about 3 or 4 years of just astoundingly strong butterfat demand, butterfat prices, is the dairy farmers have responded in spades in putting out milk with just historically unprecedented high levels of butterfat. Mm. So even though there's a really strong demand for it, we've kind of met that demand. Mm. And so we had a switch this summer now the protein is worth more than the butterfat, and the prices are dropping a little bit. So the price outlook is not as good going forward. Mm-hmm. But and then the other thing going on worldwide, so where do dairy products get produced? They get produced in the U.S. They get produced in the EU, Europe. They get produced in New Zealand. And then the list, as far as what gets produced and sold abroad, gets pretty short after that. A little bit in Australia, a little bit in Argentina. Second largest, probably going to be the first largest someday, dairy producing country in the world is India. Very different dairy industry. Obviously, a lot of us know about in India that we can't slaughter cows.
Mm-hmm.
And very, very small farms, less refrigeration. But they're modernizing as they go. And so we expect that to be a growing part of the dairy industry. But anyhow, if you look at where dairy products are produced and exported, it's like for 3 or 4 years, the U.S. was strong, but the other ones were behind their normal production.
Hmm.
That's changed now. So we are facing more competition worldwide when we export. And exports, at the turn, 25 years ago, we didn't export much more than we imported. But now we export about 15 to 17% of our product. So another way to visualize that would be about one day a week is exported, so that really affects our prices. So that's probably why we have a little bit of downward going down. Of course, farmers make their money not simply from what they get for their product, but how much it costs them to produce their product. And agriculture in general in the U.S., it's been in the news. China hasn't been buying any soybeans from the U.S. at all. And that's really depressed because they're been a large customer. And so we have the kind of pretty low prices of corn and soybean and major commodities. Well, that's not too bad for in our area where we're dairy farmers, because we have to buy those things. And so I don't think we're looking at the abyss for next year, but not as strong a prices as we've had the last 2 years.
Interesting. And that's something that definitely we'll be keeping an eye on. Another article that I came across recently, Edge Dairy Farmer Cooperative now ranks as the second largest dairy cooperative in the nation based on milk volume, according to Hordes Dairymen. The ranking announced just the other day moved Edge from third to second place due to an increase in member milk volume and growth in farm membership. It's encouraging, I would imagine, to see this in the industry and hearing these news.
So Hordes is, do you know about Hordes Dairymen? Do you know anything about them?
A little bit okay. From you.
Well, Wisconsin had a Governor Horde in the 1800s. Yeah, he was a New York, he was a Yankee from the East Coast, and he came here and he started out in the newspaper in media. They didn't have radio stations yet. And he was very passionate. He kind of, if you would say one person that introduced the dairy industry to our state, it would be Governor Horde. And he started his own farm where he kind of did like the university has research stations where they model activities. So he was kind of credited with introducing alfalfa to our state. Our state had been the number one wheat producer somewhat before that time, and we didn't have much for commercial fertilizers, and people were growing wheat on wheat and wheat, and we were having not as good a production yield, and this kind of, what would you call it, just harvesting, extracting, that would be a good word, extractive type of agriculture without crop rotations and fertilizers and so forth. They're finding better places where we grow wheat yet today out in the Nebraskas, the Dakotas, and Kansas. And so we were getting eclipsed, and we had kind of a dairy recession, depression at that time. And the governor had a lot to do. He also has a statue right at the center of the agriculture campus at UW-Madison. Governor Horde.
Yeah, that this is a part of where I think I know his name. Yeah, I've spent a lot of time on that area. And yeah.
Henry
that,
Maul. Yes, yeah. So he was a very influential man. So this is still probably the most respected dairy publication in the country. And this is a unique piece of work that they do every year on their own, is keeping track of the cooperatives. So one thing I'd say about Edge is, at least in our state, so that's they're ranking the cooperatives across the entire U.S.
Right.
I'm not sure this rule is that way everywhere, but in Wisconsin, you are required, even if you sell your milk to a private processor, you're required to be a member of a cooperative. Okay, so there are co-ops. You can name some. They're famous for their cheese curds that are farmer-owned cooperatives that also process their own product. The largest dairy cooperative in Wisconsin would be Foremost Farms. The largest cooperative in the country, which was that list you were talking about, is Dairy Farmers of America. They're huge. But in Wisconsin, if you even, and we have a strong culture here in Wisconsin of smaller, independent dairy processors making our cheese and our other dairy products. And they just historically, they thought, the government thought that there was an unequal power relationship between the small dairy producers and the somewhat larger dairy processors. So they wanted everyone to at least have a cooperative involved for them. One of the things they were concerned about is that farmers get paid, as we just said, fat and protein. And way back when it was Governor Horde, it was just fat because we didn't know how to measure the protein. So So the co-op had to be there to supervise and approve that the lab tests on the farmer's quality of the milk wasn't underhanded.
Okay. Yeah.
And so that's really, I may be wrong. I don't think Edge does very much processing at all. They're mainly a member cooperative, but they would do other functions besides this butter, fat, and protein testing. They would represent farmers in the, if there's a political stance needed, things like that. So
interesting. Yeah, interesting news. These topics are interesting for the, you know, the headline or what have you, but I also love bringing them up and all the other things we find out. Governor Hoard, that's a wonderful story. I encourage people to read more about and his impact on this state, or what you mentioned about India there and what's happening there and how fascinating that is about their dairy industry and stuff. It's great stuff, Matt. Always love talking with you. Farmers across the country are facing a lot of critical decisions. You know this better than most, not just with what you do in your day-to-day, but of course, working at UW Extension. To explore these issues, the University of Wisconsin-Madison is going to host a virtual panel discussion via Zoom Tuesday, November 11th. They're going to be focusing on emerging opportunities in farm efficiency, sustainability, and the circular bioeconomy that there is. The university is doing this, and you can find out more about it. We'll give you the information on that in a moment. But this... anytime there is a gathering of minds, a gathering of information, Matt, this feels like a benefit for the industry, especially when it comes to the ag industry.
Oh, for sure. So there's a few other activities during the year that do a nice job of something that's very needed is getting the information from the University of Wisconsin out in people's hands. So there's one, there's kind of, I think it's in the spring, is more of an update of what is the status of all the different sectors of the agriculture in Wisconsin. So this one is focused more on sustainability, and it would be a great thing to, we got some, 30 years ago, the university was accused of being a patsy to a big corporate agriculture medical supplies and not as sustainable. It was just all about produce more. And there was a lot of feedback that the university wasn't supporting some sustainable initiatives like organic production and grazing. But I've been around there quite a while now.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be a fair characterization of UW-Madison at this point. There's a lot of work in sustainable efforts.
If you'd like to take part in this, registration is required. You can register by going emailing them outreach@energy.wisc.edu. We'll also give you the website. You can contact them through that way and get the link and register as well. And the Wisconsin Farmers Union will be marking its 95th annual state convention from December 12th to the 14th this year at Chula Vista Resort in the Dells. The signature event will unite family farmers, rural residents, advocates from across the Wisconsin to exchange ideas, influence policy, and honor the cooperative principles that define the Farmers Union. Another big event in the ag industry just wanted to highlight and touch on. Have you taken part in these before,
Matt? Well, it's... annual meeting time of year.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
January and December. So you mentioned Farmers Union meeting at Chula Vista in the Dells. Farm Bureau, which is a somewhat larger farm organization, is also early December in the Dells. It's that time of year. I have gone to some of those. So those two organizations are do actively lobby. And so sometimes we can work with them, but we can't, as educators, get involved in their lobbying efforts. One would be considered, they would both tell you that they have a broad base of representing all types of farmers, but sometimes they will endorse political candidates. They'll have stances on issues. Farmers Union, the one you mentioned, is really very concerned about concentration in all sectors of agriculture. Meat packers getting larger, monopolistic. Other organizations, dairy processing facilities, even co-ops, not being as they don't act like a grassroots cooperative anymore. And so Farmers Union is also... often been concerned about really large corporate-style farms. And Farm Bureau has not been as aggressive on that. They feel they represent all farmers, large and small. So I won't explain to you which one is aligned more with which, but one tends to support Democrats more and the other tends to support Republicans more.
Can kind of read between the lines on that one a little bit. Yeah, but I appreciate that, as always. And as we're wrapping up, Matt, I did want to make sure to make note of this for anybody that it might affect and be able to help. The Wisconsin Department of Agricultural, Trade, and Consumer Protection will begin accepting applications for crop insurance premium rebates for cover crop planting at December 1st. The initiative, run in partnership with the U.S. Department of Ag Risk Management, helps farmers across the country. You can find out more about this one by going to covercroprebate.wi.gov. That's covercroprebate.wi.gov. These kind of things can be very helpful to farmers, I imagine, Matt.
Well, I'm going to challenge you back. Why would the government be excited about supporting farmers to grow cover crops? Why?
That's a good question. That's a good question that I am not smart enough to answer. But I think I have an idea. I think I have a bit of a feeling.
I didn't mean to put you completely on the spot.
No, that's all right. That's all right.
Let's explain that a little bit because we got a little time here yet.
Yep.
So historically, way historically, we didn't have crop protection, which would be a name for herbicides, pesticides to control weeds. And so what all these row crops, corn, soybeans, wheat, involved subduing the earth, doing a lot of tillage to control weeds, right? And then we have drastically improved production by doing that same thing, but then weeds come and compete during the year. And so we do use these herbicides to control weeds. And there's been concern, we've gotten pretty good at controlling weeds. So now it's November, most of the crops are harvested. A lot of fields will sit with very little biological life going on in that soil from November until May when we plant again. And the earthworms, the nematodes, the beneficial fungi, the beneficial bacteria, really would, what are they going to have on their, they're going to be metabolizing slow, it's winter, but what are they going to have to eat when there's no crop in that field? And if the field's really bare, we also expose anything that's got any slope to it when we get rainfalls, which have been observed to be getting heavier, more abrupt, we get more erosion. So there's been tremendous incentive to break the cycle of extreme tillage and then barren in the off season and let's crop rotations. So cover crops. So there's two hand in hand movements that are trying to promote soil life, and one would be a minimum or no till systems. So if we turn up that soil less, every time we open up the soil, which if you notice, I don't know about your garden, but your neighbors, somebody, you've seen someone with a really beautiful garden. And on a small scale, I don't think there's anything wrong with it, but we do a lot of tillage. We just get it looking really granular. So on our farm scale, we're avoiding that because every time you do that, you introduce a lot more oxygen, you disrupt any developing of soil structure, and you reduce organic matter. And then, as I said, if you have a slope, you get erosion, which is loss of the very best, the very topsoil. So I think we're a little further down the road on no tilling. And historically, if tillage and herbicides control weeds, and now we don't till, we need even better and more use of herbicides in no tillage systems, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now what we're doing is we are trying to, in that off-season, grow a cover crop. So it's going to put up stems and roots, and when it rains, we're going to hold the soil in place. And I think the cover part is a little more obvious, that the soil won't be bare and won't erode as much. So that's why they're promoting this. It's a great thing. There's information out now that, farmers still need yield. So let's say they start implementing all these highly desirable practices, but they actually get less yield because they are operating kind of with their hands tied behind their back because well, a good practice to do this would be tillage, but now I'm not going to till. Or I'm going to control weeds, but so I don't want to use any more herbicides than I have to. So these two practices together, no-till and cover crops, are helping save our soil life, creating biodiversity, especially in the off season. And they're complicated because they are not as simple as the, yeah, I'm going to go out and do that. You need to change your planters. If you're going to do some tillage, you got to get more precise on how you're going to minimally interrupt the soil. And so it's still a learning curve. And it's also soil can be sandy soil. It can be clay soil. It can have high organic matter. It can be well-drained or poorly drained. And so the cover crop practices you use would vary depending on your geography and your soil type.
Quite a bit. Yeah.
And the crop you're going to grow. So it gets very specific. So farmers and universities and USDA people are all learning more about cover crops. But to help the system out, they're giving out grants to help farmers grow cover crops.
All right. Man, do you have my respect, Matt. I love talking to you. I appreciate you so much. Thank you for the time. Please say hi to the rest of the extension staff for us and everything. We look forward to seeing them and looking forward to having you back real soon. Thank you for the time, Matt.
Thank you.
You can find out more and reach Matt and all the great people at Extension at extension.wisc.edu. Be sure to follow them on social media as well. They always do a great job keeping people up to date on the different events and things that they are doing over there. Head on over to your Facebook, social media pages, whatever it might be. Look for UW Extension Wisconsin. Madison, and you should be able to find our friends at UW Extension. And thank you all for joining us for another edition of WFHR's Rapids Report.